You're listening to the Out Loud Bible Project podcast with Mike Dominey. Out Loud Bible Project is on a mission to read the entire Bible out loud in a conversational and approachable way, so you can recognize your part in this conversation between you and God.
Hey, welcome back to the Out Loud Bible Project podcast. We're reading the Bible like a conversation so that we can find our next best yes in our relationship with God. If you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time now, have you found yourself having more conversations with God? Have you found yourself kind of integrating this conversation with him just more in your daily life throughout the day, not just maybe in the mornings, not just when you read your Bibles, not just before meals, but is it a part of your relationship now? If so, hey, there's more to go. Like there's more relationship to be had. There's more depth. There's more intimacy with your Creator who loved you and made you just to want to be with you. And if this is one of your first times listening to this podcast or the very first time, welcome. I'm glad you're here. And I hope that this kind of jump starts your ability to recognize that the Bible is this conversation, and it doesn't have to be confusing. It doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be scary or intimidating. It can just be, hey, this is what God wrote. This is what he wants you to know. We don't have to use the Bible as an encyclopedia to search up all of our theological questions and answers, although it can do that. Let's just open our Bible up to listen, shall we? So we're going to do that today as we're here in Numbers 18 through 21. Again, this is one of those books that if you're just reading straight through the Bible, this is when you start to peter out if you haven't already. Sometimes this gets kind of tough, but we do have some interesting nuggets, interesting stories and accounts of God's people here as they're learning to be a nation, as they're learning to put God first after 400 years of thinking that he abandoned them and they served other gods in Egypt. It's a whole new life, a whole new nation, really, that he's trying to form out of his people that he made a promise to. They don't always make it easy on him, though. In chapter 18, this is going to be one of those cases where I'm not going to read the whole chapter word for word. You're welcome to. Some of these processes and procedures or lists or censuses or things that we come across in this book, it doesn't make for great listening. So I'll spare you from that. You can go read it if you'd like. I promise if there's any like interesting tidbits or something, I'll slow down and zoom in. But otherwise, I'll just kind of give a summary and a takeaway. And if you want to go check it out for yourself based on what we discuss here, by all means do that. That'd be great. But chapter 18 here outlines the duties of the priests and the Levites, who are this special tribe of Israel that God has set aside to be the priests and to work in the tabernacle. And he set up a whole system for them to be able to be provided for as they go about their work. So they'd be able to get a portion of the food and the money that is given as offerings that they can go about their work and provide for their families along the way. And it outlines their responsibilities in the temple, which is a huge honor. Like they are among very few who have these responsibilities. As a result, also, they don't have any land. And that's what this chapter also touches on, is they don't get any land in the promised land. They don't have an inheritance, so to speak, in that way. This was kind of modeled for them. As the different tribes had camps around the tabernacle, the Levites didn't have a section of the camp that was their own. They lived and worked in the tabernacle, in God's presence, and that was their inheritance. And so that's going to be reflected in the promised land when God confirms, yeah, you don't get land, so to speak, for your families, but you do have all these responsibilities to work in the temple, which is a high honor. Peter, if we fast forward here, he writes, we as God's people are royal priests today. So when we read things like in Matthew 6, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things that you worry about, you know, food and provision, safety, all these things will be added. Or when we read in Hebrews 13, this world is not our home, we find ourselves in a similar position to these Levites. Like, we've been given a responsibility to connect people with God, and God promises to provide for us as we do that. Also, flip side of that, we don't really get to settle down into this inheritance on earth. We don't really belong to this world fully. Our inheritance is in heaven. So this is foreshadowed here as the Levites learn about their provisions and their responsibilities and their inheritance. And we, although we're not Levites and don't have to follow the same rules and regulations, we get to see kind of what God expects of us today. Now, in chapter 19 of the book of Numbers, he details a process to be able to create this water of purification. So a priest would burn up a young, perfect female cow until it turns to ash, just all the way down to ash. And then the ashes would be set aside, they'd be purified, and then they'd be mixed with pure water to make this water of purification, which then would be sprinkled on anything or anyone that was defiled by touching dead things. See, God cared very much that his people separate themselves from death. And I think this had physical benefits, mental benefits, and spiritual benefits. Physically, because death brings more decay and disease, and so intentional separation and purification after contact with death would just make for a healthier community, speaking purely physically. And then mentally, God wanted the Israelites to remember that death is not the way it's supposed to be. We say nowadays, well, death is natural, it's just a part of life. And like, while that sentiment may be comforting, we have to admit, like, when we look back at creation, death isn't natural. It's not part of God's design. Jesus wept because of it, even though he could and was about to reverse it in Lazarus's case. But God calls us to life and to live it abundantly. And spiritually, furthermore, pagan nations around Israel were steeped in death, like intentional killings, rituals involving bones and blood and corpses and body parts. Like, just don't get involved with that and don't copy any of that. Don't even get close. So God draws a line in the sand, like, you can remain tainted by death or you can be pure. And that's what this water of purification was there to help his people do. So with those chapters understood and out of the way, let's continue in the book of Numbers, chapters 20 through 21. The children of Israel, even the whole congregation, came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month. The people stayed in Kadesh. Miriam died there and was buried there. There is no water for the congregation, and they assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. The people quarreled with Moses and spoke, saying, "We wish that we had died when our brothers died before Yahweh. Why have you brought Yahweh's assembly into this wilderness that we should die there, and we and our animals? Why have you made us come out of Egypt to bring us into this evil place? It's no place of seed or figs or vines or pomegranates, neither is there any water to drink." And Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tent of meeting and fell on their faces. Yahweh's glory appeared to them. Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, "Take the rod and assemble the congregation, you and Aaron your brother, and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it pour out its water. You shall bring water to them out of the rock, so that you shall give the congregation and their livestock drink." Moses took the rod from before Yahweh, as he commanded him. Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, shall we bring water out of this rock for you?" Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his rod twice, and water came out abundantly. The congregation and their livestock drank. Yahweh said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you didn't believe in me to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I've given them. These are the waters of Meribah, because the children of Israel strove with Yahweh, and he was sanctified in them. Moses sent messengers from Kadesh to the king of Edom, saying, "Your brother Israel says you know all the travail that's happened to us, how our fathers went down into Egypt, and we lived in Egypt a long time. The Egyptians mistreated us and our fathers. When we cried to Yahweh, he heard our voice, sent an angel, and brought us out of Egypt. Behold, we're in Kadesh, a city in the edge of your border. Please, let us pass through your land. We'll not pass through field or through vineyard. Neither will we drink from the water of the wells. We'll go along the king's highway. We'll not turn away to the right hand nor to the left until we've passed your border." And Edom said to him, "You shall not pass through me, lest I come out with a sword against you." The children of Israel said to him, "We'll go up by the highway, and if we drink your water, I and my livestock, then I will give its price. Only let me, without doing anything else, just pass through on my feet." He said, "You shall not pass through." Edom came out against him with many people and with a strong hand. Thus, Edom refused to give Israel passage through his border, so Israel turned away from him. They traveled from Kadesh, and the children of Israel, even the whole congregation, came to Mount Hor. Yahweh spoke to Moses and Aaron in Mount Hor, by the border of the land of Edom, saying, "Aaron shall be gathered to his people, for he shall not enter the land into which I've given the children of Israel, because you rebelled against my word at the waters of Meribah. Take Aaron and Eleazar his son, and bring them up to Mount Hor, and strip Aaron of his garments, and put them on Eleazar his son. Aaron shall be gathered, and shall die there." Moses did as Yahweh commanded. They went up onto Mount Hor in the sight of all the congregation. Moses stripped Aaron of his garments and put them on Eleazar his son. Aaron died there on the top of the mountain, and Moses and Eleazar came down from the mountain. When all the congregation saw that Aaron was dead, they wept for Aaron 30 days, even all the house of Israel. The Canaanite, the king of Arad, who lived in the south, heard that Israel came by the way of Atharim. He fought against Israel and took some of them captive. Israel vowed a vow to Yahweh and said, "If you indeed deliver this people into my hand, then I will utterly destroy their cities." Yahweh listened to the voice of Israel and delivered up the Canaanites, and they utterly destroyed them and their cities. The name of the place was called Hormah. They traveled from Mount Hor by the way to the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom. The soul of the people was very discouraged because of the journey. The people spoke against God and against Moses, "Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there's no bread, there's no water, and our soul loathes this disgusting food." Yahweh sent venomous snakes among the people, and they bit the people. Many of the Israel died. And the people came to Moses and said, "All right, we've sinned because we've spoken against Yahweh and against you. Pray to Yahweh that he take away the serpents from us." Moses prayed for the people. Yahweh said to Moses, "Make a venomous snake and set it on a pole. It shall happen that everyone who is bitten, when he sees it, shall live." Moses made a serpent of bronze and set it on the pole. If a serpent had bitten any man when he looked at the serpent of bronze, he lived. The children of Israel traveled and encamped in Oboth. They traveled from Oboth and encamped at Iyeh Abarim, in the wilderness which is before Moab, toward the sunrise. From there they traveled and encamped in the valley of Zered. From there they traveled and encamped on the other side of the Arnon, which is in the wilderness that comes out of the border of the Amorites. For the Arnon is the border of Moab between Moab and the Amorites. Therefore it said in the book of the wars of Yahweh, "Vaheb in Sufa, the valleys of Arnon, the slope of the valleys that incline toward the dwelling of Ar, leans on the border of Moab." From there they traveled to Beer, that is the well of which Yahweh said to Moses, "Gather the people together, and I will give them water." And then Israel sang this song, "Spring up, well, sing to it, the well which the princes dug, which the nobles of the people dug, with the scepter and with their poles." From the wilderness they traveled to Mattanah, and from Mattanah to Nahaliel, and from Nahaliel to Bamoth, and from Bamoth to the valley that is in the field of Moab, to the top of Pisgah, which looks down on the desert. Israel sent messengers to Sihon, king of the Amorites, saying, "Let me pass through your land. We'll not turn away into field or vineyard. We'll not drink of the water of the wells. We'll go by the king's highway until we've passed your border." Now, Sihon would not allow Israel to pass through his border, but Sihon gathered all his people together and went out against Israel into the wilderness and came to Jahaz. He fought against Israel. Israel struck him with the edge of the sword and possessed his land from the Arnon to the Jabbok, even to the children of Ammon, for the border of the children of Ammon was fortified. Israel took all these cities. Israel lived in all the cities of Amorites, in Heshbon and in all its villages, for Heshbon was the city of Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who had fought against the former king of Moab, and taken all his land out of his hand, even to the Arnon. Therefore, those who speak in Proverbs say, "Come to Heshbon, let the city of Sihon be built and established. For a fire has gone out from Heshbon, a flame from the city of Sihon. It's devoured Ar of Moab, the lords of the high places of the Arnon. Woe to you, Moab, you are undone, people of Chemosh, for he has given his sons as fugitives and his daughters into captivity to Sihon, king of the Amorites. We've shot at them. Heshbon has perished even to Dibon. We've laid waste to Nophah, which reaches to Medeba." Thus, Israel lived in the land of the Amorites. Moses sent to spy out Jazer. They took its villages and drove out the Amorites who were there. They turned and went up by the way of Bashan. Og, the king of Bashan, went out against them, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei. Yahweh said to Moses, "Don't fear him, for I've delivered him into your hand with all his people and his land. You shall do to him as you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites, who lived at Heshbon." So they struck him with his sons and all his people until there were no survivors, and they possessed his land. In John chapter 3:14 and 15, which is right before perhaps the most famous verse in the Bible, John 3:16, Jesus talks with Nicodemus, and he refers back to this story of the bronze snake to demonstrate how he also must be lifted up on a pole, so to speak, to be the only way that everyone can be saved. Saved from what? The poison of sin, which is being delivered by Satan, the serpent who started this whole broken, fallen world in the first place as a snake. This is tying this whole narrative together back in the Garden of Eden, where Satan, as a serpent, induces Eve and Adam to sin. And this sin has just been this poison that's been spreading throughout generations, to the point where literally their sin is causing them to be bitten by snakes and poisoned. And so Moses raises up this snake on a pole to be able to be the one way for them to be saved. Thousands of years later, Jesus is lifted up on a pole so that everyone who sees him and believes in him can be saved. The story of the Old Testament is the story of Jesus. We can see that here today. That's the Thinking Out Loud thought for today.
You've been listening to the Out Loud Bible Project podcast with Mike Domini. When you become a patron of Out Loud Bible Project, you help make the Bible accessible for people who desperately need to know they have a role in this conversation with God. To learn more, visit outloudbible.com and click Support This Project. Thanks for listening.